Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Wouldn't you say that we are imprisoned by our judgments of others? And so when we need help, we tend to not get help because we have judged others for getting help, or we have judged the method in which they got help. And so now we're imprisoned. I think I see a lot of people, especially in ministry leadership or even in age where this was a very like taboo idea, and now they're imprisoned. They really needed it.
Are you ready to talk to me? My name is Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, national speaker, and author. Through my blog, books, and podcast, I have the privilege of helping millions of people get healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. The purpose of this podcast is to have on-air, authentic, counseling-style sessions where we talk about how people are really doing and give my guests and callers an opportunity to talk to me as a licensed professional counselor. Each of these episodes is meant to show you that we are all on the journey of healing, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally together. None of us are immune to the challenges and struggles of life, but we don't have to walk this path alone. I'm so proud and honored to be having these conversations with men and women who are courageously paving the way for open and honest conversations about their personal journey of healing. So if you're ready, let's talk. I'm so grateful to have Havilah Cunnington on the podcast today, and just to be able to talk to her about her life, her story, her journey of healing. Havilah, it's so good to have you.
Deborah, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I love how enthusiastic you are about therapy and the process of counseling and counselors. Like right before we started recording, you're giving me a pep talk about the importance of counseling. And I'm so grateful to see that you have such a heart for it. I'm sure we'll find out why. But before we dive into your story and your journey, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah. So I do love therapy and counseling. We're going to get into that. I get excited thinking about that. But I live in Northern California. I live in a little town called Redding, California. I'm born and raised in California, grew up in South Lake Tahoe, high school in LA, and then back up to Redding, where we took a job at a church called Bethel Church, although it was a nonprofit associated, not necessarily on staff there. And then about 6.5, 7 years ago, we stepped out and really went full-time into our nonprofit called Truth to Table, where we teach thousands of people around the world through Bible studies and courses and leadership lessons. And I have an author school where I teach people how to write their first draft in 16 weeks. And we do that, applications open, and we do that for twice a year at this point. But that's all like my day job. My best job in the world is I'm a wife of 18 years. Mm. I always say I've been married 18 years, happily for 10. No, I'm teasing. And then I have 4 boys. So I had 4 boys in 5 years. So my eldest is 17, and then I have a 15, 12, and 11. And then we have 2 dogs, a cat, and a fish.
Wow. I love that. I have 4 kids as well, 3 boys and a girl.
Did you get your girl at the end?
No. Praise okay, Jesus <good. laughs> that she came first. Because if she didn't, we may not have the 3 boys.
I agree with you. I totally agree. And I always feel bad when the girl's the last, because I'm like, I feel like I'm the only girl in the midst of 5 men.
Right.
And it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
It's like a locker room. So
I know.
She'd be born into a locker room, but she's the eldest. So
she's the eldest. She does with breaks. But that's amazing. So your wife, your mom, you're in ministry, and not just in ministry. I mean, you are paving the way in ministry for so many people. I've been able to partner with many of the ministries that you have created and been a part of. So that's why I'm excited for us to talk today. You know, earlier I was asking you, how are you doing? And you were asking me how I'm doing. And we both decided that that's a really loaded question, right? Because life is filled with the good and the hard. And on Instagram, we post the good and a little bit of the hard, but nobody really understands anyone else's journey until we invite them in. So tell us, for you, as you've been kind of assessing your life and, you know, the many times you've gone through hard things, what is a time in your life where things were really hard, a time in your life where you weren't really okay? And what did that look like for you?
Wow, that is a loaded question. And I think, you know how when you get a question and you immediately feel it?
Yeah.
You feel it, because I remember when my second son was born, Hudson, and I had a 17-month-old. They were 17 months between each other. So I had two under two. I'd had two C-sections, and I got pregnant 3 months into marriage. So it was kind of like this triple stack of married, baby, baby. And we were supposed to move into this home, and they found mold in the home, and it was right before I was going to give birth. And then we ended up moving in with my parents. So here I was, this 30-year-old at my parents' house with my new husband, two new babies. And my husband was outside taking care of the barbecue with my dad. And my mom was playing with my little guy, and I'm holding the baby, and I'm sitting there, and it feels like everything is happening around me, but I am not there. It's like I'm watching a movie, and it felt that way for a while. And I didn't know it was wrong. I just knew that life was hard and overwhelming. And so I went into a pediatric appointment with Hudson, and I told the pediatrician, "Hey," this is, yeah. She goes, "How's it going?" I said, "It's really hard." And she said, "It sounds like, because you're a pretty capable person, and I've seen you with your other son, it sounds like you might be dealing with some postpartum depression." And when she said it, again, having been somebody who didn't identify with depression or anxiety or any of those things, when she said it, it was like a cork was popped, and I just started leaking, just tears streaming down my face. And she said, I would suggest that you get help. So I remember quickly going to my car, putting the boys in the car, and I had this dilemma, because I'm an ordained minister. I've been an ordained minister for almost 10 years at that point. I'm a teaching pastor at this thriving church. I've been a worship pastor. I preach the word. I talk about God setting us free and being whole. I mean, for years.
Right.
And I'm thinking, pastors don't get depression. Pastors don't. But yet I'm in so much pain. I knew that if I didn't call this, it was a friend's mother that I knew was a counselor, I wouldn't do it. I would chicken out. So I left her a message. I called her. She called me back within an hour, which I thought was like really nice. I didn't know that she was concerned between postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. So she had me in her office. I was so nervous. I did not tell my parents. I wandered into her office, and she asked me a set of questions. And because, again, therapy was something that we resulted to when things couldn't be prayed out, cast out, delivered, all the things.
Right.
And it was for people that were broken. It was for people that didn't believe, they had a lack of faith, or they had a lack of wholeness. And so here I was in a therapist's office, and all of my theology was colliding with my reality.
Wow.
And she said, "Okay, Havilah, out of the 14 questions I asked you, you tested positive for 13 that you have postpartum depression." And I looked at her, and of course I do what every leader does. I said, "Okay, so what do I do?" Because that's what we're used to doing. We do something. And she said, "I don't want you to do anything but get a good night's sleep." And I looked at her like, I have a 3-month-old and like a bait, like, what are you joking? And she said, "If I give you things to do while your brain is not functioning, because you're not getting a good night's sleep, you'll just go deeper into depression and shame and all of that. So we need to get your brain healthy." And so she said, "You need 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night for 3 nights in a row. And when you do that, come back on Friday and I'll see you." And so fast forward that, I did see her for 6 months, and we can talk more about that. But I actually had postpartum the next two times with my next two kids. And I was told, and again, at that point, I had a godly OB and a godly therapist who put me on medication. 6 months later, I had to get off the medication because God forbid people found out. And I had so much anxiety being on it. Wow. The second time I had the baby, my third son, I told my parents finally that I was on medication and I was still hiding it. And I was told, don't tell anybody that you're going to therapy or on medication. Wow. I was literally set, do not tell anybody. And by the third postpartum, session, I didn't even care. I called my doctor. I got on my meds. I told everybody that asked because I was done hiding. It saved my life. Wow. And why would I hide that from somebody? Why would I hide the fact that the medication, I had no serotonin left because I was bed rest for 10 weeks for all three babies. Why would I hide the fact that therapy was the thing that helped me uncomplicate what was mine and what was somebody else's? So that was critical, but I had to do it three times. It wasn't just a one-time experience.
It's amazing how hormones and chemicals can actually be the culprit to some of this stuff. And I'm hearing you coming from a branch of the church. There's a lot of different views on this, right? From conservative to charismatic. But the ultimate theme, like you said, is Christians should not struggle with mental health issues. Most people who believe that would never say something like Christians should not have cancer, Christians should not have diabetes, Christians should not have arthritis. Most of them would not say that. Some of them would, right? Some of them think any ailment is a reflection of something wrong in this world. But you're coming from this culture, and like you said, your reality and your theology are colliding. And your hormones are off. Okay, so you did it. You took medication, you stayed in therapy, and what happened?
I think that's really well said. I remember my counselor saying to me, well, it's like having a cold, Havilah, you're sick. We need to get you whole. I only thought that medication was, numbing and, it was somehow going to counteract, almost like put me on something that I was out of control. What I didn't know was that I was so depleted that she said, it's a synthetic serotonin. You have no serotonin in your brain right now. We got to get that up.
Right.
So I had no understanding of that. I did not understand it. And honestly, what was really helpful was that she said, I'm on medication.
Yeah.
And I went, you shouldn't be telling me that. But what I didn't understand was that she said, I might always be on it. It's a low level serotonin. And it's just my body. It's how what my body needs. I said to her, well, how could I be off medication? And she said, well, I don't know, but in general, I would recommend that you work out an hour a day, 6 days a week, and probably get all those endorphins and all those things. And she goes, but most people don't want to do that. And it's not, they don't have to.
Right.
So anyway, long story short, the first time I met with her, 6 months in, and I'll never forget, I was still in the dumps, with postpartum depression. And it wasn't that I felt disconnected from the baby. And I think that's really key. A lot of people think that when you have postpartum depression, that you are disconnected from everybody. But for me, my margin got really small. I could only take a shower that day. I was scattered. I couldn't make decisions. I just felt overwhelmed. And then I remember driving down the street one day. This is probably 2 months into the medication. And I had that feeling of life is going to be okay. And I'll never forget. It could get emotional because it was like, I did not know I was missing it until I felt it.
Yes.
And then when I felt it, it was like, oh, there you are. There's my hope. And it was just subtle. And then it started happening day after day. So anyway, long story short, 6 months later, I am back. I'm back. I have lost my baby weight. I've got my two babies. I'm living my best life. I'm preaching on the weekends. I get off the medication and I have the nerve to ask my counselor, who I now believe I have completely won her over. I said, okay, I just want to know before I stop seeing you, what do you think about me? Like, just like your general, what do you think like about my life and all of this? And she said, well, do you really want to know? And she wasn't asking it like sarcastically. She just was asking unfiltered, what do you really want to know? And I said, yeah. And she said, Havila, here's the thing. You would have been in my office eventually, but the baby got you here sooner.
Hmm.
And when she said it, I realized, oh, so you're saying there's other things that are contributing to this. And she said, yeah. And she said, I see a lot of people create ministry widows and ministry orphans. And I see a lot of people that don't make it. My dad was a minister. I was married to a minister. And she's like, you are not set up for longevity. And it's because people don't know what is theirs and what is somebody else's. And we tend to just, we don't know. And she said, you don't know what healthy boundaries are. And she said, I would like to teach you healthy boundaries. And if you're willing, I'm going to invite you to come every Friday. You have to make a 1-year commitment.
Wow.
It has to be for an hour and a half. Yeah, it's a big commitment. And there's going to be 8 other women that you're not allowed to know anything about them. You'll know their first name. They're all influential women in the city. They own businesses. They run churches. They are all have a heavy load, but it's going to be a safe place where I teach all of you what healthy boundaries are. And by that point, I was sold because I was back to myself and I thought, she's right. I was a minister's kid who saw a lot of ministry friends that hated their parents, hated the church, left, just didn't, felt like they were secondary. And I knew I didn't want that in my own life with my kids and my husband. And I didn't know how to do that. So that year that I committed, I spent $35 a week, which was money I did not have. And I would save my money for that and 1 Starbucks a week. And I would wander in her office. And that year ended up being 1.5 years that I sat with her.
Wow.
And I learned what was in my yard and what was in somebody else's yard. And what I did not know was that all of that teaching for 1.5 years was the discipleship I needed, because God knew that in about 3 short years, I would make a massive move and my platform would go all over the world and I would be traveling and speaking and getting hundreds of invitations. And I did not know all that was coming. And yet I had that clear boundary world. So I knew what my yes was. So my no's were automatic. Mm. And that, I'm telling you, honestly, Deborah, my life would have blown up.
Wow.
I would not be married today. I would not, I was set up because I was a yes girl. I had ulcers at 23 from working at the church. I was a good girl. I owned everybody and everything. And it would have been disastrous. And so it saved my life.
Yeah, it set you on a totally different course. It course corrected for you. Is there something in your life you want to change? I sure hope so, because healthy people are always on the trajectory of learning and growing and healing. Maybe it's your negative thinking that's keeping you stuck. Maybe you find your emotions are overwhelming you with fear and hopelessness, shame, anxiety, or depression. Maybe you're struggling in your relationship with God. Maybe you're stuck in a pattern of unhealthy relationships. Maybe it's behaviors that are sabotaging your life, like an addiction or unhealthy habits. It could be your attitude, your mindset, or your perspective on life that needs to shift. Whatever it is, in order for change to happen, it has to start from the inside out. Taking the best of psychology and pairing it with God's word, my book Reset is all about getting healthy from the inside out. It's a book of 31 mindset shifts and sustainable practices that will guide you into the process of healing by giving you practical steps that will transform your life with change that lasts. No matter how many times you failed before, I want to help you do it differently this time. So grab a copy of Reset today and get ready to reset your life from the inside out. Check out DeborahFileta.com/reset or grab your copy anywhere books are sold. I want to go back to where you said 6 months, because 6 months is a long time to feel not yourself. But at the same time, I want to normalize that, you know, when you're going through hormone shifts, when you're going through chemistry shifts, when you're not sleeping well, it took you 6 months to kind of feel like you were back. For some people, it doesn't take as long. For some people, it takes a little longer. But I think it's important for people to understand that you will get back to yourself. Like, this isn't forever. And I think part of the reason that you got emotional, and I know this from my own experience, is when you're walking through depression, postpartum depression, or any depression in general, sometimes you think it's going to be like this forever. Like, this is it. This is it. And you see the future through the lens of what you're feeling today, and it feels impossible. It's like, how can I do any of that through this feeling, through this experience, through this pain, through this fogginess? How? And it's so discouraging to feel like this is the norm, but it's not. That is the wave of depression. That's exactly what depression is. It's like the flu, and it comes over you and you feel like it's going to be like this forever. But once your serotonin and dopamine levels balance out, and there's so many different ways for that to happen, like you talked about, exercise, diet, lifestyle changes, medication, it's almost like your body is signaling to you, hey, pay attention, something needs to change. And you responded to that signal, even though your theology told you not to.
Yeah. And I asked my therapist, I said, when will I know I'm okay? And she said, when you think to yourself, I never want to feel like that again.
Yeah.
And that was a good signal for me. When I finally felt like that was a season rather than me.
Right.
And so I knew I was in depression when it felt like I was in it. But when I was out of depression, I could actually identify. I think when you're in depression, it's your life. It's right. Everything. It right. was from the beginning. You just have this sense of like, it's always been bad. But when you're out of depression, you're like, oh, that was the season. And what I also had learned, which again, I'm not the medical expert, but that if you do stay on medication for a year, the likelihood of your brain pathways staying, like the neural pathways working, just in my case, at least, because I had to do it 3 times, they had recommended. So by the time I hit with my second child and my third and fourth kids, I stayed on the medication for a year. And I didn't have to, but I had just done a little, that's what the doctor had said. Again, things always change, you know, there's always change. But for me, that was important. And I think the idea of like the anxiety of, I got to get off this because this is bad. That was a massive thing for me. And I was able to, by the fourth, who cares?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Nobody knows. It's up to me. And the truth is, if I was a diabetic, nobody would judge me for insulin.
No.
So yeah, I'm not altering my behavior.
Right.
I'm adding something I need.
Right. Absolutely. And I feel the same way about medication and the fact that it really does save lives. It really saves lives. I'm one of those lives. I've gone through postpartum depression and it really does save lives. Okay. So let's just talk like women's health here, because hormones don't just mess with you during postpartum, right? For some people, it's during pregnancy. For some people, it's after pregnancy. But then again, during the season of perimenopause and menopause, and things kind of start shifting again and amplifying everything and coming back up to the surface. Have you had different seasons since then that you felt like things were off? And if so, what have those looked like?
That's a great, great question. So I would say 2 different answers to that. So first, when you say perimenopause, I'm like, yay, because that's what I'm studying right now in my life. There's a set, I believe it's 39 to 50 is you can easily be in perimenopause, which is not menopause. It's the signs that your body is starting to shift.
Right.
And it's kind of an unspoken segment of a woman's life. So
yeah.
We just go, are you in menopause? Have you skipped your period? Then no, you know, you're fine. But one of the things I've done recently is went and got blood work to figure out what's going on with me and what's happening in my estrogen and testosterone, all the things that we need going on. With that, I have seen that I cannot attribute like depression, anxiety, and those things only to hormones in my life. I have to attribute it also to my choices of sleep, of, you know, travel, a busyness, of maybe a mindset. So I generally won't just go down that I have to get medication or I need my hormones checked. I first and foremost, I think I go into, have I had a good night's sleep? Am I having movement? Is my heart rate, has it been up? Have I had a good sex session? It sounds amazing, but some of those can be really powerful. Also, you know, am I drinking enough water? Am I watching too much TV or socials that are regurgitating things that aren't helpful? So I do a kind of an assessment. And then what I have found is, at least right now in my perimenopause, is that my PMS sessions are longer and they're more intense. And so just understanding that that's what's happening in my body and giving myself grace. But I tend to have to assess my choices first.
Yeah.
And not feel bad about it, but just realize I'm getting older. I can't do it. I can't run as hard. I can't just go off 5 hours of sleep every night and call it a day.
Right.
Especially if you're a working woman. I think it's different if you're home and you can take a nap in the afternoon, but if you're working, you can't fake that.
No.
Yeah.
And here's what happens. You start having more shifts during this decade. I mean, that's the reality. Some people are more susceptible to the shifts than others. Here's how you know. There's a good chance you were more susceptible to the shifts because you had postpartum depression. You can see the shifts and how they affect you versus somebody else who might not have had postpartum depression. They still had the same hormonal shifts. Their body just isn't as sensitive to those hormonal shifts in the same ways. So sometimes you can get a clue based on your history with periods, your history with your cycles, your history with your pregnancies. And just so that you have that awareness, you have it on your radar. There is something called PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And basically what that is a low-grade depression that kind of hits during certain times of the month, where one person might just have PMS, but when that's elevated, then they consider it a diagnosis of PMDD. It's like, my moods are crazy. I don't feel well during this time, physically and emotionally. You usually find a change. And sometimes it happens during ovulation. Yeah. Other times it happens during your actual cycle. But to kind of have your ears open for the fact that this might be something to consider for people who have PMDD, the recommendation is first, let's try a birth control pill. A lot of people, that doesn't work for them and it makes things even harder. The second way they tackle that is with a low dose antidepressant to help stabilize you through the ups and downs of your hormones. And then, of course, for people who are closer to menopause, there's something called hormone replacement therapy and all different kinds of things. But I think the key is to understand that estrogen and progesterone are connected to serotonin and dopamine. So as things rise and fall, some women are really going to feel it. And it's not because they're crazy. It's not because something is wrong with them. It's that their threshold has changed because now there's these hormonal changes underneath the surface and things that you could have handled before. Yeah, that's stressful, but I can handle it. Feels completely different when the whole floor has been raised and everything is just a little bit more overwhelming. And like you said, you have to have a holistic approach. You have to look at the health of your life, your sleep, your hydration, your nutrition, your movement, because all of those things also affect your hormonal stability. So give me an example. Like, how does it feeling for you these days? How old are you right now? Am I allowed to ask that question?
Yes, of course. I just turned 46. Okay. So I'm right in that span of like, I was laughing with my husband because my last child was born at 35. And so I had that little 10-year window and here we go again. So I, you know, I'm getting the hot flashes and I'm getting the mood swings and just, a little bit of spaciness, but you know, cycles regular, all those things. So for me, I would say I definitely started feeling that. And I think, like you said, I'm a little bit more aware. I also had a mom who was steady Eddie, like the most low key, casual, grew up on a farm in California, hippie, like just wonderful. And when she went through menopause, it was like, we got a different mom.
Wow.
I mean, it was so dramatic. She was touchy, edgy, you know, she would shut down and I mean, and again, this is not a reflection of her character. Right. It was like an absolute,
it's a reflection of her chemistry, not her character.
Thank you. Exactly. And she walked every day. I mean, she was a healthy person. She took vitamins by the handful, but she never got help in either other than that. She took vitamins and walked. And so I saw her suffer. And so that's been one of my things is like, I am not going to suffer just to suffer. And I think there's a lot of that kind of thing of, we didn't talk about it and we just did what we wanted. Like, we just had to suffer through it. And to be honest, I have two tweens and two teenage boys in my house, and I can feel my hormones get, I told my husband, I can get angry. Like, that's a normal, I've never felt rage.
Yeah.
I think rage is a hormonal imbalance of like, I will get you, you know, I'm like, that's not a good level. And so, and it's not anything they've done. I can just feel right. in my body. It's
well,
like,
one way that I describe it to people, especially as we're kind of looking at, could this be PMDD? Could this be hormones? Is, you know, typically you see things for what they are. Like, I always tell my clients, you see things in color, in pastel colors and, you know, bold colors. But during PMDD cycles, you see things in neon. Everything's in neon. And here's why that's important to note, because it doesn't mean that the things you're experiencing and feeling aren't valid. It's not, oh, she just has her cycle, so it's invalid. No, it's valid. You are just seeing it magnified. You're seeing it exaggerated. You're seeing something in neon that you would otherwise see in pastel, and it's making a difference in your body and how you respond and your anger levels and your rage levels and your irritability and your overwhelm and your tears and all of that.
Wow, that's awesome. I did not know that. That's brilliant. How would somebody know that they're having that?
Well, I think it's so important for women to be aware by tracking their cycle. I think every woman should be tracking their cycle and just being able to see, is there a correlation between certain times of the month? Is ovulation, I'm feeling more anxiety during my cycle? Am I feeling more physical symptoms or emotional symptoms? Sometimes just knowing that there's a template going on underneath the surface just helps you feel a little bit more normal. It might not take away what you feel, but at least you're like, okay, I understand this is happening underneath the surface and I'm more susceptible to these feelings and thoughts. And so knowing that I'm probably seeing neon right now, it's probably not the best time to have this conversation, right?
Yes.
And so just really being aware of our body and what our body is telling us and what stage and phase we might be in is so important, because then you know there's something going on underneath the surface. Like you said earlier, this isn't me. This is my chemistry. This isn't my character. Mm-hmm. This is my chemistry. I still need to take ownership of my chemistry. I'm still responsible for how I respond and act and interact. But knowing that this is my chemistry helps me know, okay, maybe I can save this conversation for later. Maybe I don't have to confront my child right now. Maybe I need to go take a break because what's coming out of me is my chemistry, not my character. And I need to wait until my character is back online.
Well, I don't know who taught it, so I don't want to rip anybody's content off, but I had listened to a podcast once about women using their cycles as a template to get their work done. So one of the essence was when you, after your cycle, you are in like springtime. And that's when you are supposed to tackle big projects, because you're hopeful and you have big picture and you can just handle it. So you tackle that. And then in your springtime, your summertime, which is kind of in between, you do the normal things. You're just kind of in your good rhythm. You do some big stuff, some little stuff. But then in your PMS week, that's your edit season. And so that's when you go through the emails and you go through your agendas and because you have a more of a kind of a ruthless part where it's like, I'm not doing that. I don't want to go.
I don't
there.
Have the bandwidth have for the, this yeah. or that, the
exactly.
overwhelm.
So I have used that template significantly. Like I have said to my husband, babe, this is my edit week. Let's tackle that in a week, 10 days. Let's tackle our parenting style in 10 days. Let's tackle what our vacation is going to look like, because right now I'm going to cut off things and I'm going to shut things down, because that's good. I'm going to use what my body's telling me to do in a positive way rather than like blowing up my life in that week. So I have just used that again. I'd have to find I'm sure there's somebody out there who's done all that, but it's really fascinating. I get excited like, oh, here's my week where I take on big projects. Or here's my week when I think it's, I know, when you're ovulating, you're more emotional. And so they said that middle week, so you've got your big project week, your middle week is when you're more emotional, which is when you should be writing, social like posting, creative. Things creative within your heart, doing those type of things. And then your fall week is your edit week.
That's so fascinating.
You can kind of cycle. Yeah, it's really helped me.
That is very fascinating. And I love that because it doesn't just look at the negative aspect. It shifts it to look at the positive of what do you have in this season versus what don't you have? It's like, I feel this in this season. I feel terrible. I'm struggling on this and that, my body. But what do you have in this season and how can you take advantage of it? People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out. Going back to that season when you said, like, if you wouldn't have taken those next steps to get medicine and help, it would have been the fork in the road and your life would have gone down a completely different path. What would you say to the woman who is listening and they're like, I'm at that fork in the road right now?
I think you and I talked about it. Not all counselors are the right counselors. So I would be very cautious. I would say there's two sides to the coin. So the first side is you are worthy of getting help. And it doesn't make you less spiritual. It doesn't make you broken. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't, you are worthy of that. And you have to fight for your life. You have to fight for it. You can't expect your husband or your best friend or your mom to drag you to get help. You have to get help. And I think there's something inside of you that knows if I don't get help, I'm not going to make it. And use that to propel you away from shame and blame and anxiety and do what you've got to do for your kids, for your future, for, you know, again, a lot of things I do as a minister now, I think about what about the girl that is going to be where I'm at that doesn't have the resource or the permission. So for the women that you're leading right now, whether it's your employees or your daughters or your friends, you getting help gives every other woman permission to get help if they need it. And that's a powerful thing. And then secondly, not all help is the same. So if you get online and you find a counselor, that counselor may not be somebody who knows God. And see, when you have a filter with a counselor that knows God, then they see you differently. They see you as a spiritual being, not just a physical being. And so I'm an advocate for therapy. I'm an advocate for counseling. But I do think when it comes to things of the heart, I recommend you get somebody who understands your spirit because yeah. You are a spirit being and we want to elevate that. And then again, one thing I think we also don't think about is go to your doctor and actually get a workup. We tend to go to therapy before we go get our levels checked.
Right.
And so that's another thing. But I would just say as another, like a girl in the trenches, like you are, I don't think I knew how bad it was. And the hardest part when you're in the fork in the road is you don't feel motivated. Right. And that's the thing that we're asking you to feel. So I think if I had just, all I had to do is leave a message and walk in the office. That was it. I didn't have to think. I just had to make the conversation, call and get in my car and get in the office. And if I could get in the office or get on the Zoom call or whatever it is, that's the only two things that we're asking you to do. We're not asking you to do anything else. We're
I love that.
Save the marriage or anything
Thank
else.
You for saying that because here's the thing. I always tell people that the work of healing is hard. But living unhealed is harder. It's a harder burden to carry. And when you look at the work of healing, you're looking at this mountain that feels like you cannot scale it. And it's so steep. The mountain of healing is steep. But I remind people that, first of all, you don't scale the mountain of healing. You go around it, around and around and around and around and around until you get to the top. And sometimes it feels like you're not healing because you're seeing the same landscape. I just saw this, but you're a little bit higher. And what you're saying is so important. We're not asking you to get to the top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. We're literally asking you to take the next step, just one tiny step. That's it. Maybe your tiny step is 5 to 6 hours of sleep tonight. Maybe your tiny step is 8 hours of sleep tonight. Maybe your tiny step is calling the doctor today and saying, hey, I just need to make an appointment to come in and get a physical and get my hormones checked and talk to somebody about what I might be going through. Maybe your next step is to pick up the phone and make an appointment with a counselor, or go online and see the Deborah Flata Counselors Network and look at one of those counselors and pick somebody out and say, okay, I'm going to set up a meeting. I'm going to click that button. What is that next step for you? Maybe your next step is talking to your husband mm-hmm. or your spouse yep. or your friend and saying, I just need you to know I am not myself. I am really struggling. What is that next step? That's all you're responsible for right now, is the next step.
And Deborah, wouldn't you say that we are imprisoned by our judgments of others? And so when we need help, we tend to not get help because we have judged others for getting help, or we have judged the method in which they got help. And so now we're imprisoned. I think I see a lot of people, especially in ministry leadership, or even in age where this was a very like taboo idea, and now they're imprisoned. They really needed it. And they may have not needed it in their 20s, but you're in menopause and you hate your marriage, or you hate your life, or you don't, right. you don't feel happy. You don't feel fulfilled. And it's because you've been imprisoned by that preconception that this is only for people that need, like, are weak or vulnerable or broken.
Right. Right. Or like you said, your theology, you're imprisoned by your theology yes. that God is not pleased with me. I don't have enough faith if I need this. I must not be praying big enough prayers. Maybe there's sin in my life that's causing me to feel depressed. And certainly there's a sin in your life. We all have sin. We all have things we need to yeah. tweak and change and work on, and things that God reveals for us to heal. But the punishment is not depression.
Yes.
Right? In fact, depression is often the catalyst for healing. Rather than the punishment, God is saying, hey, pay attention. I want you to yeah. heal. I want you to pay attention to this part of your life. I'm revealing it because I want to heal it.
I love that. It's why I wrote the two Bible studies following that was I Do Hard Things, Breaking Free of Fear and Pain. And the second one was I Do Boundaries. Mm. You know, how to finding, you know, how to say no and stop feeling bad about it. And I just wanted to hack that for people, because those are things I didn't know how to do. And for me personally, I remember telling God, like, why did I have to go through postpartum 3 times? I was kind of mad. Like, I did it right the first time. I got help, got a medication. I did everything right. And then you had me do it two more times. And again, he doesn't give us depression, but I think physically he just allowed it. And why did you allow it? And he said to me, and again, I want to make sure that everyone's listening, that my theology is not around that God hurts us to give us a message. But I do want you to understand that, and I'll say this when I'm preaching, not all pain has a purpose. You have to give your pain a purpose. That's the only way to get your power back. You can be in pain. I could have postpartum and I could get healed and God is my healer. But the power that I can gain from that is I get to take it back and finish the ending. That's what makes me powerful. And for me, I asked him, why would you allow me? And he said, you know, have one, if you had gone through it one time, I would have helped you, but I allowed you to go through it 3 times. And I gave you a strategy so you could actually hand it down to the next girl and say, these are the steps that helped me. And once I saw that it wasn't just me being tortured, but because I documented my healing, because I took the breadcrumbs and I honored those breadcrumbs, I was able to create curriculum that allowed thousands of women and men to climb out of pits of pain and to actually put really healthy boundaries around their really great life.
I love that God calls you have. I love it because it's like tender. you know? He's like, have, let's talk about this. That's how he speaks to you, you know, and that's who he is to you. And one thing I love about you from what I've been watching from afar is the love that you have for him, the trust that you have for him, and how he's walked with you through hard things. And that's kind of overflowed out of your life. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing today, the projects you've worked on, how God is speaking to you. Just tell us a little bit about what you've got going on right now.
I love that. Well, you said it well. You said, I love how God speaks to you. And something that I have been obsessed with and have dedicated the last 3 full years of my life, but really the last 25 years in learning this, is how to hear God's voice. And we have a whole culture of faith that we don't know what God is saying. We don't know if it's God, the devil, ourselves. And when we are caught between those 3 things, we end up freezing. We go, I don't know if it's God, then I better do it. But what if it's the devil? Then I'm being led astray. And what if it's just me? And we just have this huge confusion. And what I've learned is that God is not complicated. He's not hiding from us. And honestly, I think the core of it is everyone deserves to hear God's voice. That's the core of what I really felt. So many years ago, I really learned how to hear his voice. But what shocked me was that it wasn't in any way that I thought it would be. Growing up in church, I thought it would be a radio station. I thought all of a sudden I would hear his voice and it would be an audible voice, or I would just go, oh, that's the divine talking to me. And it wasn't. And as I began to teach people how to hear God's voice, I really found that there were 4 distinct ways that he interacts with his kids. And again, there's thousands of ways that he interacts, but this is kind of the way I describe it, is how love languages, the 5 love languages, defined are how we experience love. I call them prophetic personalities. It's in the way that we actually encounter God and interact with him. And it helps us start interacting with him. So I'll just go through it really quickly. There are 4 prophetic personalities. I call it prophetic personalities, not to freak everybody out. Prophetic means how God shows up in your world, and personality is how you show up in your world.
I love that.
Are 4 types. You have the knower. The knower is the light bulb. It's the person that knows. They know something. God speaks to them through insight and a supernatural intuition, a prompting. It's clarity. It's wisdom. It's, I know that I know. I know I'm supposed to move there. I'm supposed to marry. I'm supposed to give. There's this knowing. And if someone said, did God say it? You go, no, but I just know it. I just have this sense. I just know this is the right thing. Then you have the seers. And the seers are your dreamers. They're your visionaries. God speaks to them through visual cues, whether it's pictures, it's dreams, daydreams, it's imagery, it's colors. God has this interactive experience with you where you just, it's within your vision and God speaks to you in that way. And then there are your hearers. And hearers are those traditional, we've kind of been taught this is how God speaks. They're the Samuel, speak for your servant is listening. God speaks to hearers through words, conversations, narratives, and kind of an interaction of a play-by-play with a conversation. And then lastly, you have your feelers. And your feelers are those that God interacts with in an emotional level. You get to experience his burdens. You experience his presence. And there's a sensation. You walk into rooms and you experience what's happening in the room. You don't quite know why. And as you grow in your faith, you realize that you maybe have a gift of intercession, but you interact with God emotionally. And my husband's a feeler. My dad's a feeler. The reason that I did this is I'm a knower. And in a lot of areas, I felt like I was the heathen because I wasn't having this seeing and feeling and this, you know, hearing interaction. I just had this know that I know I'm going to be here. And so what I've found is that we had 150,000 people take a test to figure out what prophetic personality test, what they kind of rate. And we found that feelers were 70% of people, that's how God interacts. And seers were very limited. There wasn't a high percentage of people that were getting a very visual experience. And what we found was that you can be bilingual and trilingual and quadlingual. You can have all of them interacting in your life. But the goal is, how do I find my primary prophetic personality so I know he's been speaking to me for a long time and I know how he interacts with me? And so this kind of came out of a whole course that I put together. And it really is about learning how to discern God's voice and but to also be confident. And so I unpack it. It's my brand new book called Created to Hear God, of course, right? Created to Hear God. And in this book, I unpack all four prophetic personalities. I talk about strengths, weaknesses, areas to grow in them. And then also, how do you interact with other people? The top questions. Well, I thought the Bible was all we needed. Those type of questions. And then also, how do I grow in my hearing of God's voice? So I'm very excited about this new book. And I hope it's a resource to our generation to uncomplicate hearing God's voice, because everyone deserves to hear his voice.
Yeah, amen. And everyone's invited to hear his voice.
Yes.
When does the book come out? What's release day?
Actually, it's coming out tomorrow. It comes out December 12th. So whenever you're listening to this, it came out December 12th, 2023. And it's in Barnes & Noble's, on Amazon. And Deborah, for the first time, I did an Audible book. So I actually
listen
on Audible for all of my auditory listeners. And I have an ebook and I have a hardback
book. I love that.
I'm very excited about this. I'm hoping that this changes. I'm hoping it changes our entire faith culture to uncomplicate hearing God's voice, that you don't have to be special, unique, super spiritual in this denomination or this, you know, have this kind of education, that hearing God's voice is at the, like Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice. It's not learned to, it's not get a degree to,
right?
It's part of relationship.
Right. Yeah. It's an invitation that everybody gets. It's just, we have to know what to look for. And that's what your book is going to help us map out. You guys, if you're not connected to Havilah, you need to be, because she just brings such a balanced approach of spirit and truth. And I think you're going to be blessed by her and her resources and her authenticity. What's the best way that people can connect with you?
It's a great question. HavilahCunnington.com. You can go right to my full name, HavilahCunnington.com. I'm on socials. I have a podcast called The Havilah Podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you can go over to The Havilah Podcast. And I'm over there, but mostly just my full name.com. And I'm mostly on Instagram. I do have other places, but that's more where I hang out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for shining a light on the fact that you were at a fork in the road and how God led you to the other side of that. And I appreciate the work that you're doing for the kingdom.
And I appreciate the work that you're doing. I am so passionate about what you're doing and what you're facilitating in this generation. And I just believe that you are a forerunner. And I'm excited to know that there are other faith-filled, spirit-led counselors out there, therapists that have a passion to help us. And thank you for being one of those that saved my life as a minister. And I'm just so grateful for being on this podcast. Thank you.
Amen and amen.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about all of those, as well as hundreds of articles and courses, as well as the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, over at my blog, truelovedates.com, or my website, deborahfalada.com. I love connecting with you online, so find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Falada. Send me a DM and tell me your story. If you have a question on your mind or a guest suggestion, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/talktome and let me know what's on your mind. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so great being with you today. I can't wait to talk with you again next week. I'll see you then.